Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld. And each week on this program, I try to present paradigms of new ways of thinking about the world around us, new forms of reality, new levels of consciousness that haven't been really out there in the mainstream. So I find people, interview people that I think have a unique and unusual perspective. Tonight's guest is one of those people. His name is Michael Pilarski. He is the founder of the Human Fairy Congress. He's also the head of the Friends of the Trees Society. He's from Washington. He's a pharma educator and author. Michael, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, I heard you just had a really nice conference called the, Fairy-Human Relationship Conference?
The Fairy and Human Relation Congress.
Congress, I see.
And yeah, we're all delegates. We have lots of humans and lots of fairies.
Fairies, how do you actually define what a fairy or diva is?
Well, that would be take a while to explain, but basically, a lot of Christians, for example, are familiar with the idea of guardian angels.
Uh-huh.
Let's say that fairies are the guardian angels of plants and
mm-hmm.
the nature world. So they're the divine, the workers for the divine working with the plants and all forms of nature, streams, mountains, rivers, lakes, volcanoes,
mm-hmm.
oceans, planets, solar systems. You know, so we go on, you know, there's many scales.
Well, to put it in another kind of context, would you say they're like the consciousness of these things, you know, the awareness, like everything has consciousness, so this is a label for the consciousness of plants.
Well, actually, the plants themselves are beings. They have their own consciousness.
Uh-huh.
The fairies are, you might call them a race or a wave of beings, an evolution that actually works with the plants. So they're not the consciousness of the plants. They help direct and guide them. But they actually are not the plants themselves. They're assistants, you might say.
But certain divas or fairies hang around certain plants. There's a direct relationship to a plant and a fairy around that plant, right?
Yes, and there's many, many levels and degrees of fairies, from very small who hang out maybe with a single plant or in a single locality, to a fairy that takes care of a whole neighborhood or a section of a forest, or on up when you get to the larger scales, the devas themselves, they might be in charge of a whole valley, a whole mountain. So there's different scales. You might call it a hierarchy even, of small to large.
I mean, I would have no idea what you're talking about, except for the fact that when I enter a forest, I feel a presence. You know, there's something there. It's not just trees and plants. There is a presence that I tune into.
Right, right. And that would be one of the things you're doing is tuning into the fairies and devas that work with the forest. Mm-hmm.
So how can I communicate with these beings and what do they have to tell us?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do to increase awareness. Some people are just born with it. Some people it just happens instantaneously. Other people work at it for a long time. And you might say it's a matter of intent, intention, and working at it. And fairies don't respond very well to negativity. They're really light, playful, fun, and upbeat, you might say. They're, you know, love, they, coming from the divine, they're very pure and very loving. And so they respond to loving vibrations, and people that are coming to them with intent to, you know, have a loving communication.
Right, and what kind of things do they say to people? What kind of communications do they have?
Well, it varies from the mundane. For instance, in the Pearlander tradition, uh-huh. Maychelle Small, right from, you know, from Virginia. She's been one of the famous fairy people of these last few decades.
Right.
She communicates with the fairy realm to find out, do the carrots want watering today? Which plants would like to be planted together? Is it time to apply what kinds of fertilizer? So she goes after really mundane details about the plant's health and what they can do to make a good productive garden. And other people receive, you might say, cosmic or divine information that helps them in their life path. You know, in other words, very transcendental or, you know, inspirational, you know, messages.
Right. I did. I interviewed the woman from Finhorn, not
Dorothy
Patty,
McLean?
But yes. Yes.
Yes. Oh, good. All right.
She's a great person. She was talking about the snow pea. What a great presence that was, you know. The little snow pea was had an
well,
major...
Besides the fact that every, you know, snow pea in the garden or the row or what, you may have a fairy working with it, but there's a deva of the snow pea that looks after all snow peas around the whole world. It's sort of like a node of consciousness that extends to wherever snow peas are. And that is a very large being. And that's the being that Dorothy was talking about, not just like the fairy behind this particular snow pea, but the fairy or the deva that ensouls all or works with all snow peas around the world. Or let's say the one that worked with all the sequoia trees. Or all the redwoods, or all the ponderosa pine, or all the dandelions.
Wait,
so we get into these.
When a species goes extinct, when a plant is no longer around, that devic presence then is no longer part of the earth vibration. Is that what happens?
Probably. There's some conjecture here, but bear in mind that each, you know, let's say a plant that goes extinct. Let's say dandelion goes extinct sometime.
Yes.
It isn't that it ceases to exist. It probably would reincarnate on another planet. Its life stream goes on.
Oh.
So it, in a sense, is an eternal being, and it would go to another place. So it's not extinction, in a sense. Extinction is not forever.
Uh-huh.
Maybe on this world... It's just like when a human dies and, you know, when you or I or our friends or whatever, when people die, that is not the end. It's just that their being is goes to another place, another dimension, another planet.
Well,
another.
In that sense, though, when a plant does go extinct, it seems like the vital information that energy had for us is no longer available, and so you know, we're here to be caretakers of the earth, basically, and ensure that these beings are here to be with us, right?
Oh, amen. But definitely, the people that come to our fairy events are very much stewards of the earth and love the planet and love the earth. We're not promoting extinction. We're just stating you know, it's been a part of evolution and nature for a long time.
Right.
But humans are causing a lot of havoc in the world, there's no doubt. And that's why it's important, one of the reasons it's important for humans to work with the fairies and the devas, because we need to fix things up, and they can help us do it, or they can help direct us, because they have a much better connection than we do. So you might say humans should be co-creators and stewards of the earth with the fairies, and conscious deliberation with them.
Well, do they have any practical knowledge about how we can make the planet a better place and more
cohesive? Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's just beginning. This is the very beginning phase of people tuning into the fairies and saying, what can we do to mitigate this site that's had heavy metal fallout from the, you know, from the copper smelter upwind? And they would say things like, well, you bring in certain mycorrhizal fungi, you bring in certain soil nutrients. They actually can help us figure out the practical, physical things that we can do to help turn around healing the planet, healing the waters. And, I mean, there's practical things we can do. It isn't just all mind. There's, you know, physical activities. You go out there and clean up the stream and plant new things and, Yeah, so it's a co-creative endeavor.
I believe that. I mean, just like the human body, they say there's a natural cure for anything that, you know, ails the human body. There's some kind of herbal or natural cure. There must be some kind of herbal plant cure for anything that has poisoned the earth.
Right. There are those things, and there's a lot to learn. We don't know it all. We're in the beginning phases of this, but it's exciting work, and it is happening.
I mean, are people writing down? I mean, I guess it's human sensitives that are communicating with these plants and getting the messages of how to heal certain toxic elements. So is there books about, is there someone writing this down, this communication? Can we find it?
There's a lot of books. I'm a student of this, and I have in my own personal library probably around 200 books that discuss fairies, devas, and these various realms.
Mm.
And there are very few at this point that are particularly talking about how do humans work with the fairy devic realm to heal the earth. So there's very few books to go on out there. There are a few websites. Kristen Hummel, who is one of our presenters, comes to mind. Marko Bogachnik, who's from Slovenia in Europe, has published a number of books on this topic. He's probably, I would think, maybe perhaps the most famous person currently around that's publishing on this. I think probably a lot of the work that's ongoing actually isn't being published. I'm really excited that you invited me to be on your show, because I know that listening to us are lots of people out there that believe in fairies but can't talk about it with anybody because they're afraid of ridicule. You know, most of society does not accept it, but there are more and more people who are talking to fairies these days and seeing them than there, you know, we're on a real curve. And I think it's part of the whole new wave of consciousness that seems to be sweeping the planet. And your show is one of the examples of that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, New Realities, that's the show that really tries to go out there. And, I mean, when you say seeing them, do they look like, what, you know, with these little creatures with wings, these little human-like, or are they different? Because I think I've had a different type of experience.
There's a lot of forms that they take. They're not it's not a Disneyland Tinkerbell knockoff.
Yeah.
They exist for much of their time as balls of light. You might call it, you know, many people, you know, when people see orbs, oftentimes fairies spend a lot of their time as balls of light. Sometimes they take the physical form of human forms of little humans, and they tend to take the forms of the person that they're communicating with would expect to see. So in other words, they're building on what you already have in your mind. And so that's why for some people they may appear one way and for other people another. I mean, in our country we may tend to see little white or Caucasian fairies. In a country in Africa they would probably tend to see, you know, a black fairy, or, and, you know, so in other words, they take the form of the peoples that are around them.
Well, I think I saw, I mean, I was sitting by this river up in the Berkshires about 10 years ago, and I saw these little balls of light, blue light balls. They looked like what we'd call orbs now, but they were these balls floating around, and I got some kind of message from them. I can't remember what they told me. I think I was trying to get out of the city and just trying to find some peace and quiet. And this river was making a lot of noise. And then I got a communication like it's something like it's all a part of nature. Something like that. They said to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
the balls of light is a very common feature for people's communication. Some people don't see forms. Some people just get messages in their mind. Some people see very small beings. Other people see very large beings. And one of our fairy teachers, you know, they point out things like sometimes the largest fairies can take the form of very small ones, just so that we can, you know, be able to grasp them. Because, you know, if you had something coming at you the size of a mountain or a freight train, you might be a little scared. So they'll scale themselves down. Mm-hmm. Now, as I said earlier, there's many sizes of fairies, from little infant, you know, from little specks of light, all the way up to grand beings that ensouled whole or sit behind whole mountain ranges, for instance. Like the Deva that's behind the North Cascade Mountain Range is a formidable, quite, you know, large being. But they may appear to somebody as a mountain dwarf, you know, something that's a reasonable size.
Well, there was a woman that you were in contact with who had photographs, a woman from England. Hope and Randy Mead told me that you were had something, a book that you were...
Well, I have a book,
yes,
that I've just published, or has just been published by R.J. Stewart Books. And this woman saw the fairies and worked with them for 40 years. So my main information source, besides reading these hundreds of books, and I have personally talked to hundreds of people that have seen and or communicated with fairy beings. But the Daphne Charters, I mean, this interview should really be about Daphne Charters and certainly not about
Well, tell me about her then. Tell me. Yeah,
well, Daphne Charters was born in 1910. And she died in 1991 at 81 years of age. And from the early 50s until she died, she had a very close relationship with a whole group of fairies. And they were friends, and they actually did work together. So they were like a working team. And she wrote down a voluminous amount of information or stories or tales or... from the fairies. She was you might call her a stenographer or a transcriber. The fairies told her the stories, and she wrote them down.
Like what kind of stories? Tell me one, if you don't mind.
Well, for instance, the fairies that she communicated with would, sometimes when humans sleep, they go off to dreamland and they may astral travel and go to other realms. Well, when the fairy meditates and dreams, you might say, and travels off, they go to a higher realm of fairyland. I mean, the world is full of, the universe is full of many dimensions. And they go off and have these exciting journeys. They may and go off to other realms and then come back and tell Daphne about their exploits. And just one, you know, one story that comes to mind is these fairies going off to the land of the beings of color, and they went in particular to this being that worked with the color yellow. So it was like a deva of yellow, of color, because there's a whole race of or evolution of beings concerned with color. Another with sound. Another with scent. But anyway, so here they are in the land of color with this yellow being, and it's just almost everything is like hues of yellow. And the flowers, you know, all these yellow flowers, for instance, they would walk along, and the flowers are so excited to see the yellow, you know, the master yellow being, they just flock around and just fly up and just swarm them. In other words, the beings in these other dimensions become more than just plants. They become beings that flock around, and I imagine it sounds a little fantastic, but
no, it sounds fascinating.
What people should do is read some of these books, and you'll go to you'll get ideas that you never had before. This is the kind of thing they don't teach you in school.
Yeah, I'm getting ideas. What's the name of the book that you just mentioned?
It's called 40 Years with the Fairies. It's volume one of the collected manuscripts of Daphne Charters. And we'll have three volumes out eventually. We have to get all of her writings in print. And when Daphne died, we had become good friends, and she had left me all of her manuscripts. And she was in England, and here I was in the U.S., and she couldn't find anyone there that wanted to do the job. So I was willing to do it, and it's taken me a long time. But I finally got this volume one out, which is, you know, a good chunk of her work. And I've got two more to go.
Wow, I'd love to see that book. That's exciting, isn't it?
Well,
amazing.
We'd love to send you one.
Yeah, okay. I will call you back after the interview. But, you know, there's been fairies that exist throughout all of history. I mean, they've talked about fairy circles, and I think I stepped in one. You know, do you know about that, fairy circles?
Well, fairies tend to... The circles is a cosmic, you know, figure, and they dance in circles. They have fairy rings. They may make ring pass knots. Like, for instance, a more mature fairy...
Oh, a fairy ring. Yes, a fairy ring, yes.
Well, they may make a very... Let's say there's a plant that's sick, and the plant that's in charge of the area, or the fairy, excuse me, in charge of the area, may call to itself all the local little tiniest fairies and concentrate them around the sick plant and make a ring pass knot or a circle around the sick plant that holds in the smaller fairy beings for, let's say, 24 hours, whatever, so that they get an extra dose of fairy energy. Because fairies, one of their jobs is to channel cosmic energy to the plant realm, to the physical plant realm. Because we are always being, let's look at it this way, the sun is always bombarding the earth with all kinds of solar particles and all kinds of waves. And sometimes they get so intense when these solar outbursts happen that they have to shut down the satellites and they mess with the human communication system. So these emanations from the sun are very real and very powerful. Most of them, they are not visible to the human eye. The fairy realm takes some of these cosmic energies and transmits them to the plants, or in the sense they're a transformer. They take the cosmic energy coming into the earth and transform it into an energy that the plant can utilize for its own growth. So
uh-huh.
The fairies are necessary for all plant growth on earth by transforming these cosmic energies into forms the plant can utilize. So it's a counterpart to photosynthesis, when plants take sun rays and within their chloroplast turn it into chlorophyll and into plant energy. So every plant is a solar cell, or you might call it solar panel, but they also need these energies that the fairies transform or transmit to them.
Okay. So, I mean, is that something they do consciously in their work?
Oh, yes. They're very conscious of what they're doing at the larger realm. When you get into the very small... diminutive, I mean, we're talking like the speck, let's say something from the size of a dust speck on up to the size of a quarter or a 50 cent piece. Those are, you know, limited intelligences. They gain in intelligence over time. And like humans, they reincarnate.
In what way?
They come back to Earth many times. Just as...
But they don't... How does... But wait, what reincarnates? I mean, they don't have a physical form, do they?
Well, no. They do in their etheric realm. But most humans now accept the idea of reincarnation, of
right.
being here for multiple lifetimes, and you go somewhere else in between, heavens, right. hells, purgatories, or wherever. But you go somewhere else in between, then you come back, and each time you learn more. The Earth is a great big school, and we're all here going to school, whether we like it or not.
Well, no, I totally agree with that. Yeah. No, I agree. So they do that too? The divas do that too?
Yes. They're on Earth for a standard, you know, for a tour of duty, you might say, or a lifetime, and then and these fairies that Daphne is relating to tend to have lifespans of you know, around 100 years on the Earth plane, and then they depart the Earth plane, die, as it were, to the, and they're not on the physical Earth plane, mind you. They're on a little bit different vibration or frequency. They're at an etheric dimension.
But so I would say the reason for incarnating and reincarnating is the evolution of the spirit, of consciousness. So are these divas, fairies, evolving as well, consciously and spiritually?
Yes, yes. They come back larger, more intelligent, more capable, more responsibilities. Just like humans. They're very similar. We're different life waves, but there are similarities.
Mm. So was Dorothy a diva in a past life? Can you make that crossover?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. No, probably not. I would say she was, you know, she's a human, but she learned how to see into the fairy realms, and she went further into it than, just about any other author that I've ever read on the topic. So she has inspired me to start the Fairy and Human Relations Congress and get these books out. So
the name of her book is what? What was the name of the book?
40 Years with the Fairies.
And you just published Volume 1?
Yes, it just came out. I mean, it was released less than a month ago.
Which publishing company?
R.J. Stewart Books.
R.J. And you're going to publish two more volumes of that?
Yes, Yeah, we have two more to go.
That's amazing. That's fascinating. I mean, with all this talk of all these realms, it seems like, you know, the etheric dimensions are packed with beings, you know? It's pretty crowded out there, isn't it?
Well, it's a good thing they're not all on one dimension. As someone said, if we could see all the dimensions, it'd be kind of like a traffic jam. And so, yes, there are many, many frequencies. And that's why on the radio, you know, if you could tune into every radio station on Earth at the same time, what would come out? It'd be pandemonium. So you need to be able to tune into a specific frequency. The fairies are on one frequency, humans are on another, and it's the rare human and even the rare fairy that can see into the other's dimension. The fairies are working with physical plants, but they're not like watching every single human that walks by. They have their job to do, so they can't be too distracted, and neither can we. If we could see into every other frequency, we'd be all jammed up too. So it's rare, but I would say it's rare for humans to see into the fairy realm, but so many people are changing their frequency levels on Earth at this time. It seems, you know, I know that there's hundreds of thousands of people now in the world that are seeing into these other dimensions, mostly for just short periods of time. I mean, there's very few people that would want to even, you know, always be perceptive into these other realms. You know,
well, when I saw those, it's like a shift in consciousness. I was in a slightly altered state somehow just by meditating on this river, and I felt like, it's not in a normal state that you can have that access. But it seems like right now the veils between the dimensions are getting thinner, and the Earth itself, I mean, there's a great diva of the Earth, I guess, who's probably changing form, would you say?
Oh, definitely, yes. The veils are getting thinner, and my understanding is that the being that the Earth as a being is a lot of people are calling it the ascension process.
Uh-huh.
There's an increase in vibration within all the realms, you might say, and so everything's going up a bit, and humans too, and they may go up, kicking and screaming, but beam me up, Scotty, it's happening. You know, we're more and more humans are getting altered in some form or another that's making us more predisposed to love and to peace and to harmony and to fixing up the Earth. Well, it's about time, I think.
Right. I mean, are these divas all about love, or is that an emotion they don't have? I mean, what...
That's the emotion they do come from, is the emotion of love. They come from that straight from the divine, and they don't have a mean bone in their body. They are here to serve, and they're full of love. And so tuning into the nature, spirit, fairy, Davic realm is a realm of love. That's what they're doing. You know, they're loving the plants, loving the earth, loving the waters, love the clouds. Whatever they're working with, the motivation is love, and they're directed from from the very top levels on down to the small levels. There's direction. They're not all like out there on their own, but there's direction and cohesion much more than humans can experience or know.
Do they have other emotions? Do they get sad and angry? Is there anything else going on for them?
Well, that there seems to be some difference of opinion on that. But yes, from Daphne's books, it's very clear that they get sad sometimes. They can get, anger doesn't seem to be something that comes up on the radar much, but sadness, they do have emotions, they do have feelings, and seeing their forest wrecked or people just running amok on the planet, does hurt. It affects them. But they're not like these vengeful or revengeful beings that are out to punish humans or anything. They're more like, they're sad over what's going on, but they're not a warrior race that's out to defend. They're there to empower nature.
But there is a dark side to the fairy kingdom. I mean, some people like gnomes. I mean, they're not all these interdimensional consciousness are not all, joy.
They're not all friendly to humans. No, I would certainly believe that they're not all like lap dogs waiting for some human to notice them, to pet them or anything.
Right.
They're very much their own beings, and they're strong, but I don't see them as, in a sense, dark beings by any means. There are, in my cosmology, my personal cosmology, there are many dimensions and many beings besides fairies and humans. I mean, we're not the only things out there.
Right.
And some of them I would use the term dark beings, and there are some, nasty beings out there. And fairies tend to get a bad rep. There's a lot of people like, I would say if there were fairy lawyers out there, there'd be a lot of suits going on calling what people attribute to fairies or to nature spirits.
Oh, I get it, yeah. Yeah. Well, someone I did read somewhere in some of the fairy lore that someone did get stuck in one of those fairy rings for a long, long time. You've heard about that?
Well, Rip Van Winkle, for instance, who was in the fairy realms for a very long time and then came back. So there's a lot of stories like that. And within every fairy story, there are oftentimes kernels of truth. I mean, we're talking about the old fairy stories, Grimm's fairy tales and stuff.
Right.
A lot of times there's kernels of truth in there, but you have to be able to sort of sort it out from the storyline that's been overlaid on it over the time.
It's amazing, new field of study. I know the work Hope and Randy Mead are doing with the orbs and other people. It seems like we are now just opening up to a whole new world of possibilities.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, humans are opening up to the ideas of space beings and angels, ascended masters, spirit guides.
Oh, definitely. How do angels fit into this realm?
Well, angels are a whole different, evolution line of beings. And, of course, angels are very complex, too. There's not just one kind of angel. There's many. And I'm not an expert on angels. I have read a lot. But I focus my life mostly on working on understanding the fairy realms as much as I can. And But I would say that angels are different. Angels are work with humans a lot, but they're also working on planetary levels. They're a very high level scale of being, very strong personages, and very helpful to humans. Now there are fairies, for instance, that work with humans in healing. So every hospital, every massage studio, all those people out there that are working with healing human beings, they have fairies that assist them, whether they know it or not. But if they did know it and would consciously ask for their assistance and work with them on a more conscious level, the healing and the medicinal work would be improved. And there's also angels that work with healers and with medicine doctors. So, in other words, every person that works with healing others has fairy assistance and angel assistance.
That's good to know that people should ask for assistance, when they're working in that
field.
Yeah,
all the spiritual traditions say that if you ask, you'll get more help than if they're just assisting unaware.
Now, are we ever going to be able to, scientifically prove the existence of these other beings? I mean, I have been working with the space beings, or have done many interviews with people who have had contact, and we're almost, I think there is proof out there that the government's covered up that there are space beings, there have been crafts from other
planets. I don't think there's any Western scientific, evidence and spirituality and all these knowledge about other realms, I don't think there's any that they're necessarily contradictory. And more and more people are looking at the physicists that are looking at the dimensions of nature, of life, and of reality, and going into quarks and all these very small particles. The things that quantum physicists are coming up with are very much, you can start getting the idea of these other realms, other frequencies, other dimensions, are becoming more and more clear that there are these other dimensions, and they're beginning to figure out how they might fit into it. But there's a long ways to go here, and so I don't see any problem. There is a problem in meshing them, but I think that we will be able to get beyond it at some point. But at this point, Western scientists, they haven't come up with evidence, you might say, or that they're willing to admit.
Well, the problem I see with science is that science looks at a basically dead universe, or a universe where life is an anomaly. And what you're saying about consciousness and beings is that life is abundant throughout the universe on many levels and dimensions of many realities.
Right. And behind every physical form, there are spiritual forms. Behind, you name it, from at all levels, planetary, solar system, galactic universe, galactic clusters. I mean, there are intelligences of incredible scope, and we get into some very large scopes here.
Wow.
And when we look at how many stars are out there and how many galaxies already, it already is boggling the imagination and the idea. And if you accept the idea that there is intelligences behind every physical form we can see, and that if the Earth is teeming with life, on not only the human and animal and plant realm, but teeming with life on spiritual dimensional realms, holy Toledo, we have a universe that is just incredibly populated with life.
That's the problem with science. They have yet to discover that. They still think it's an accident that life occurred on this planet. I mean, that's
they're only working on one dimension, so they're working from they have impaired judgment. Once you start being able to see into these other realms or communicate with beings in these other realms, your capabilities increase amazingly. The Earth is full of history of incredible saintly beings, or beings of very great power, And they are inspired by these other beings.
Well, like Rudolf Steiner. You've studied the work of Rudolf Steiner, right? Was he the one who started permaculture?
Oh, no. Rudolf Steiner started anthroposophy and biodynamic agriculture.
Oh, biodynamic agriculture.
Yeah, biodynamic.
And so he was in touch with those other realms as well. But what's permaculture? How does permaculture, because you're an expert in that, how does that fit into this field of study?
Well, permaculture is a really recent phenomenon, and it was the term was only came up with in the mid-1970s. It's a form of how can humans live on the earth without damaging the earth? How can we make the earth richer instead of poorer? How can we build up the soils, fix the waters, grow the food, build natural buildings, get our energy sources from renewable energy sources? How can we live sensibly and sustainably on the planet so we don't destroy what we need to live on? I mean, you know, humans have been destroying the planet for quite a few millennia now, and if we don't turn around, we're either going to be extinct or things are going to be pretty dire. So permaculture is about how do we fix up the planet and live here in a reasonable, have a reasonable lifestyle, but live in a reasonable union with the planet. How can we live here without hurting things?
So what do they say? What's some of the keys, and how has that been into the work with the fairies? You know, or doesn't?
Well, we have to make the land as biologically active and rich as possible, increase the numbers of plants, microorganisms, beneficial insects, birds, animals, etc. So we need a great biodiversity of life, and we need to take care of all that life. And, of course, the fairy realm is after the same goal, to keep alive as much as possible the great biodiversity of life on Earth. And so we have that common goal, increasing the life forces and the life forms on Earth, making things rich and juicy. And so we have similar aims. Most permaculturists would not have, you know, would not say they have anything to do with fairies. It's not part of
right.
the permaculture dogma or anything. It's just I happen to be one of those people that cross over between permaculture and the fairy realms.
What's the best way to increase the life force of the land and the possibility for plants to flourish?
Well, but basically by encouraging as much photosynthesis as possible, getting as many plants, leaves as possible out there, fixing solar energy and converting it into nutrients. And every plant is a solar factory producing sugars and all kinds of powerful substances. And half of it they use to build their own body, and half of it they pump underground to feed the web of life that's in the soil. So we need to really improve the web of life above ground, below ground, within the waters, and by doing it consciously with the fairy realm, we can do it quicker, you might say. Or they can help us understand how to do it, because we know a lot on the physical, scientific level. But they can help us actually, you know, like which organisms are missing, for instance, or what can we add? What can we do to make things better? And we can go at it from the scientific viewpoint and or combine it with a fairy metaphysical viewpoint. And so a few of us are doing that. We're still the voice in the wilderness, so to speak, but there's a lot more people waking up, and so I'm very hopeful about the future, by the way. I mean, the things look pretty dire out there if you study the world situation, but I'm hopeful that humans can rise to the challenge we have at this time. And I think that we have a lot of allies from these other realms to help us do it. And so it's about time we work together. Humans
We tend to be kind of, what was that you said?
Well, humans tend to be kind of anthroposophic or big-headed, like, you know, we're the big shots, we're the intelligent ones. And we need to take perhaps a more humble place here on Earth and think that we're in partnership with all other life rather than in charge of it all.
I mean, it seems like we could have a sustainable planet, except, you know, the population is increasing, and that's why we even need more more understanding of how things grow and more ways of increasing the vitality of plants in order to feed an ever-growing population for the planet.
Right. Well, obviously, you know, there's a limit, and many people have thought we've gone far beyond it. But with permaculture, I believe that we could feed all. You know, we actually could feed and house and clothe the people on the planet at this time. But there's certainly a finite limit, and we're certainly not doing a very good job right now. So there's lots of room for improvement.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of land. You fly over this country sometimes, or I even flew over India. There's huge vasts of land that are just empty, and it seems like, you know, permaculture and could feed another billions of people. More, you know, we could probably hold another.
Well, if we took care of what we had, but the thing is, we again have to take our place. Our more humble place on the planet, and leave enough room for the other animals. You know, every inch of the planet shouldn't have to be devoted to feeding humans, even if we were doing it in a good way. We just need to have, you know, give space for all the other species that live here and take our place within the greater scheme of things. So, you know, humans getting their population under control is part of that.
Right, right. I understand. So it must kind of bother you, the expansion of cities and the, you know, the paving of nature. And when you go into a city, how do you feel?
Well, there are some cities I'm actually quite much more fond of than others. Cities could be run in a good way. Cities in themselves are not bad. But the fact that almost everything is imported into the cities, we need much more self-reliant cities, and the more localization is a word that's really running around. You'll hear more and more these days. Localization. How do we grow our food locally? How do we get our energy locally? How do we meet our needs on a more local basis instead of, you know, bringing it from so far away? Which means that every city then would have to much more rely on its own resources and there's tons of scope for improvement.
There was a guy who wrote a book called Metro Farming. Do you know about that book?
No, I don't know that particular book, but there's many books on urban agriculture now.
Right, because when I look at New York, Manhattan, where I am, I see that every single bit of everything was brought here from someplace else, even a speck of dust that came from someplace else. I mean, all the food's imported, everything. There's nothing here that's
sustained. Oh, well, there is a bit, but localization for New York might be, you know, 100-mile radius.
Uh-huh.
You know, it certainly, you know, you're a pretty extreme example there, and some people might make a case for reducing the population of Manhattan.
Right.
Rather than trying to maintain it.
Well, it sort of works as long as the food keeps coming, as long as, you know, things flow in and out of the city. It's working, but, you know,
well, there's a lot of problems out there, and I would advise people to hedge their bets.
Return to the land, you think, and return to.
Well, you certainly at least should have more relationship with the farmers in the local area, and you really should be stopping paving over the farmland, you know, and New York has a lot to answer for, so
they do have good water,
though. Take care of all the area around you as much as possible and really get it up to snuff. People don't appreciate land as much as they, you know. We all rely on the land, you know, because we all have to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's really hopeful about you is that there are answers, and we are getting help from many levels of dimensions if we would just listen to it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right. I would say that within our permaculture movement, we have knowledge to fix up the problems, feed the people, house the people. We actually know how to do it sustainably, not us as a particular group, but humanity as a whole has enough knowledge, but it has to have the political will. It has to have, there has to be the, a lot of people have very little power at this time. And so power to the people is probably an appropriate slogan at this point, that people need to have more control over their own lives. So you might say the fairies might have some political viewpoints too.
Well, that would be good to talk to them about their politics and
love and sharing. You know, how's that?
Well, I think, you know, it does come down to taking care of the land and our bodies and the earth and nourishing the thing that gives us life. It makes the most sense. Why would we want to destroy, you know, something that's feeding us? It doesn't make any sense.
No, the world seems pretty insane at this point, from a fairy's point of view, or any, you know, most any rational person that's thinking in terms of seven generations or even their kids and grandkids. Obviously things are going downhill, but I know we have a limited amount
of
time.
We're almost out of time.
Could I talk about our fairy congress a little
please but also I want you to talk about mention some books that people can go study permaculture, but talk about the fairy congress.
Daphne Charters in her early writings talks about the fairies all getting together to talk about the human problem. And so they brought fairies from around the world to talk about the human problem and what could they do to help influence humans and reach out to us.
Uh-huh.
So I took that idea and in the year 2000 organized the first Fairy and Human Relations Congress on the physical earth plane, where we get together a bunch of humans to talk about how can humans work more together with fairies, how can we communicate better. And so we've brought some of the world's foremost people on working with the fairies, people like Dorothy McLean, from Findhorn, and David Spangler, Peter Tompkins, who wrote The Secret Life of Plants.
Oh, yeah.
And Catelyn Matthews from England, who's one of the authorities there, R.J. Stewart. So we've had over 60 presenters over the year. We try to find the best people that we can. And last year, Hope and Randy Mead were two of them, and that was our connection here. But we bring together 200 to 300 people at this annual event that are real interested in these in fairies and working with David and beings.
And
we've been meeting in Washington State here. And so any listener that's listening and is interested, it's the last weekend of June in 2009 is our next one. So you're invited now.
Well, give the website. Give your website.
Well, it's www.fairycongress.com. That's F-A-I-R-Y. So that's the traditional fairy spelling or one of them. Fairycongress.com, and there's lots of information on there, and it will also lead you to many other. There's some bibliographies in there, and you'll if you poke around there, you'll see we have a lot of links to other websites. So our goal is to be a hub for people interested in learning more about these realms.
Because it's a hope for us all in understanding these other realms of consciousness and communication and thought, and you know, and there are answers in these other realms, it seems like.
Right. Well, we're forming, I've always been feeling a lot like I'm a part of the Fellowship of the Ring these days, and here we have this battle between dark and light on Earth, it sort of seems like, and we certainly could come up with some bad guys on Earth and some, you know, arrays of dark beings, and then we have fairies, angels, you know, human beings are working with love in their hearts, trying to make a better world. And there's this alliance that's going on to try to turn the world around into a better place. And then there seems to be some people who just seem to be out for their own selfish interests. And so there's this quite it feels like I'm part of a character in a novel or a fantasy film sometimes. The Earth is a fascinating place at this time, and it's great fun to be here watching what's going on. So I hope all the readers out there are having, your listening audience is having a great time looking at the world right now, because it is an exciting time, and everybody has their own little influence. We all count.
Even the fairies and the divas, they count too. Because
they count big time, and so I feel good that they're on my side. Every plant, every tree, every animal, fairy, and Deva all vote for peace in the world and fixing things up and stopping the destruction.
Well, I'm voting for that too, for sure. And if people want to get in touch with you personally, how can they reach you?
They could just email michael@fairycongress.com if they want.
Okay.
Anybody wants to communicate on this earth realm.
Well, thank you.
I encourage anybody out there that, hey, there's a lot of people out there that believe in fairies. If you're one of us, you're not alone. So I'd just like to encourage you to keep on believing.
Yeah, come to the Fairy Congress next year, fairycongress.com, the last weekend in June in the Northern Cascades of Washington. It's the same place next year?
Yes.
Okay. No, that sounds exciting. It's a whole new realm that you're opening up for many people.
Well, Alan, why don't you come out next year?
Well, maybe I will.
You need a vacation, probably.
Probably, I do. No, I'd love to come out there and see, because I have had experiences with these beings, and I know for some of what you're saying definitely is true for me. Some of these experiences. Are you in touch with them yourself, the fairies?
Well, yes. To me, it's kind of like being part of a video movie. I don't hear, I don't see fairies per se, but we have great adventures together, and it's an important part of my life. But most of the time, I'm a farmer and a family person, and I do a lot of useful things on this realm here. But I also believe that looking at the fairy realm is a good thing for us.
Mm. Well, thank you, Michael, for all the work you're doing to help the planet and help, bridge the dimensions. I think it's very important that people are aware.
Yes, and thank you, Alan, for helping make people, people aware that there are other dimensions, and bringing people on like myself. So, good on you, as they say in Australia.
Thank you. No, we're all doing it in our own way. I'm talking to Michael Pilarski, right?
Yes.
P-I-L-A-R-S-K-I.
That's right.
Founder of the Fairy Congress, the Fairy and Human Relations Congress, which is happening every June, and he's a permaculturist, and also you can find him at friendsofthetrees.net. Okay, Michael, I will be in touch with you about that book, okay?
All right. Best wishes to you and all of your listening audience.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And next week, I have a very exciting guest as well. That will be Marie Jones talking about 2013, the events after 2012. If you want to email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Tune into my website, newrealities.com, for events in and around New York and on the planet. Check out my YouTube videos at New Realities. Thank you for watching. This is Alan Steinfeld. I'll end with this song by Chris Williamson, The Song of the Soul, which is a great way to end.